so happy that you are here, and we look forward to your message.
Thank you very much. And I shall be going back to our director of music and saying, let's have Oh Happy Day. I can't imagine what he might say, but there we are. Thank you for that wonderful, wonderful variety of beautiful music. Thank you. It's really superb. It's a great joy, a great honour, and a great privilege to be with you this morning. And I know I speak for my Lincolnshire Boston colleagues as well with me this morning. And I know I bring hearty greetings from all of us back home. Their service was about, I suppose, 7 hours ago now. But I'm sure that they were thinking about us here this morning. It's wonderful to be here, and thank you very much indeed. I want to talk about what I've called sacred spaces and holy places. Those places that are unique and special, the places that touch us, the places where we feel something very special in our hearts, where the atmosphere is palpable, I suppose one might say. And I'd like to ask you to just to think in your own hearts of those places that mean something to you. They can be anywhere, places that have got a resonance in your own lives. I'm sure that you can think of those, and perhaps will be doing as we walk through this journey now. But I'd like to take you first to North Yorkshire in England, which, if you know it, is a wonderful part of the world, a very beautiful part of England. And a place where I was taken just 3 weeks ago. I went to stay for a couple of days with some friends of mine who had retired up to North Yorkshire. We had lunch and then we drove out into the country, and the lady who I was with said, I'm not going to tell you where we're going. I want it to be a secret. So we drove into the North York Moors, which were full of the most beautiful purple heather. It looked magnificent. We drove into a remote village. We got out of the car, and there was a pub and a church, and that seemed to be all, and I was wondering where we were going to go. And she said, just come into the church. And from the outside, the church didn't look very much, and I thought, I'm not sure what we're going to see. And we walked into the church, and she said, go down the stairs and into the crypt at the bottom of the church. And we walked into this 11th century crypt where St. Sed, a great Celtic monk, had been buried. 1098, I think, was the date of this cell. And it was one of those places where you just stopped in your tracks because words were unimportant. You just stood there in silence and felt whatever. And this to me was a precious, sacred space. It was a good thing I'd never been there before, but she said to me, I hope this was something for you. And I said, it was quite overwhelming. A sacred space, a holy place, touched by something. The next day they said to me, we'd like to take you wherever you want to go. And with that in mind, I said, the place I'd really like to go is Revo Abbey, destroyed in the 16th century in the dissolution of the monasteries. A sensational ruin, 450 years old, standing derelict, again in this beautiful valley in North Yorkshire, where the sense of prayer is quite magnetic. Silenced from those monks all those years ago when Henry VIII dissolved the place, but now touched with a tremendous mystery, a sense of God there, a real sense of the other, the numinous, very, very powerful. I just wish there were no other tourists there. I just wanted to close my eyes and just take in and soak in that wonderful atmosphere of that place. It was extraordinary. The church is magnificent. The birds fly in and out now of the ruins. But for miles around, you can go home and think about that and just take it in and imagine those monks singing in the choir all those years ago. It was a truly extraordinary experience. And I drove back to Lincolnshire just reflecting on what I'd seen, that cell of St. Sed and that monastery of Rivo. And I came back to our church of St. Botolph, which in itself, of course, is a magnificent church. St. Botolph dominates the skyline for miles around. And for Bostonians in Lincolnshire, when you come back there, it's always a great joy to see it still standing, to know it's still there. And you feel that great sense of pride. I've only lived there 2.5 years, but I feel a tremendous sense of pride at being the steward of such a wonderful building. And that too has that great feeling of power. People walk in. People often say, what will I see when I go in there? And I just say, it's the wow factor. You just walk in and people say, wow. They also say, how do you heat this place? Which is, of course, partly why we're here this week. Because we're trying to raise $5.5 million to keep the place going. But enough of that. For now, anyway. I'll talk about that on Wednesday. I was reflecting on the tourist side of this wonderful church that we are part of, and when I was first appointed to be the vicar of Boston Stump, the archdeacon, he's my sort of line manager, I suppose, phoned me and said, you realize that as well as being the pastor, you've got to be the tourist officer for this place, because we've got to try and bring people in. And it's a great joy to be doing that, because it is such a wonderful place. And you are touched by holiness when you go in. And think of 700 years of people worshipping there, and before that, a church on that site where people will have been worshipping as well. One of the challenges that we have there is to try and make people know about it, to try and educate people in England to know about Boston. Two people came to play in a concert the other day and they came up from London and said they'd never heard of Boston. They thought this was the only Boston. And then they saw the church and they were struck by it, of course, as people would be. And we look to see ways in which we can bring people to come up here and perhaps to have a kind of Eastern pilgrimage route to go to the sacred places that you can go to on the way, because there are so many of them. Ely Cathedral, wonderful building. Peterborough, where Catherine of Aragon is buried, Henry VIII's first wife. And then journeying up to us at Boston. And then perhaps going on to Lincoln, the great cathedral, our cathedral church of Lincoln. And then on perhaps to the north of England and to those places that I began with. The list goes on. Wonderful, wonderful pilgrimage places. Holy places. Touched with a wonderful atmosphere, a sense of the other, a sense of something wonderful, mysterious. We've come a long way in Boston Stump from the time of John Cotton. We've moved a long way from Puritanism, as I'm sure you have here, as I know you have here. Somebody came from Boston, Massachusetts, and wrote in our visitor's book, John Cotton would have been horrified to see stained glass window statues and icons. And then he'd added, serves him right. I love that. I've dwelt on that ever since. We have music, like you have here. We have color. We have senses, we have smells, we have incense. We have all those things that make that place a holy place. John Cotton probably would turn in his grave, but there is a wonderful sense of mystery there now and a wonderful sense of being touched with the divine. It is glorious. And we live in a very different age. We live in a hugely different age from then. But even now, we live in an age where people have moved a long way from church going. People who have nothing to do with church, who don't know how to behave when they come into church, people in England stand outside when they have a baptism smoking, and because they're terrified of coming in. They don't know what's going to happen. They think that something will happen when they come into the church. But to try and bring people in to sense that sense of divine, that sense of other, that sense of mystery, which we so desperately need in our world, is something that we've been trying to do in Boston Stump. Trying to make people feel comfortable or at home in the uphill struggle of daily life. And we as a church, with a big C, have strategies, we have programs to encourage people. We have endless books on the shelves of Christian bookstores telling us how we ought to find ways to encourage people. Fresh expressions, they call it, of bringing people in. But I think you can just start by making those places places where people are touched by something. And so we have icons, we have candle stands, we have statues, and people come into our church day by day, hour by hour. The church is open all day long. We're very proud to keep our church open so people can come in and be still and pray. We have a huge number of new arrival community people from Poland, Lithuania, Latvia, Russia, coming to work in our part of Lincolnshire. Many of them are Roman Catholics, but all of them find in St. Botolph's a place of welcome, a place where they can come in, a place where they can sit, and they can be still. They can find God, and they can pray often in the homesickness of being far from home, and find a stillness and a welcome as well. Because we also are trying to be more and more a place of welcome. Because that is, to me, about what we are about. Kingdom values. About preaching and living out our lives as people who are determined and committed to peace and justice, equality, tolerance, and openness. And in the face of fundamentalism, in the face of the Anglican Communion seeming to fall apart over sexual issues and divided over so many things, we seek to make our church a place where people can find a home. I wrote in our magazine that I would like to put, "We are an equal opportunities employer." We'd like to make sure that people feel they can come in and feel home there. And in a world that's torn asunder by violence and division, as we know only too well, I've no desire to be overseeing a church that turns anybody away, but to be a church where people can capture a sense of otherness in the face of the tawdry, acceptance in the face of injustice, and welcome in the face of hostility. This, to me, is about affirming the values that you too seek as Unitarian Universalists: acceptance, encouragement, liberty. And it is most assuredly about being challenged to confront anything that would stand in the way of responding to God's call to love our neighbors as ourselves. The call that's echoed down the centuries to work for justice and compassion. For Christians, these are kingdom values, the kingdom of God breaking through and transforming our world. For all of us, it is the transforming power of love. That is my dream, and I have no doubt it is yours as well. A holy place, sacred spaces where we can feel inside ourselves that sense of something else. And we can be transformed by that to go out and change our world. Thank you.